Palooza, the only comic book podcast that is always time to go. I'm one of your hosts, Chance.
It's a comics and nerd culture podcast, and I'm your other host, Cameron.
Hello, Cameron.
Hello, Chance. None of our listeners will hear that you just ate a frozen strawberry.
On camera.
On camera for a considerable chunk of time.
I mean, I popped the whole one in there. It's a lot of chocolate, a lot of strawberry.
And yet, here we are.
I'll eat the rest while you're doing your best book.
Mm-hmm. That's what you think.
You're just going to speed through your best book just to spite me.
Uh-huh. I was good. I laughed. I cried. Times were had. There was art. Anyway, Chance, back to you.
Yes, I was just telling Cameron, not my family, when we're like, ooh, we need a delicious snack for tonight. True Fru has become our new go-to.
We're not sponsored by True Fru.
We could be.
We could be. I'd sell out. I'd shill for True Fru.
The weird thing to me about True Fru is when you look at the nutrition facts, like, it's very little, like, calories and all that, but, like, there's very little of everything else, too. Like, I'm just like, is the strawberries, do they lose all, like, nutrients when they freeze it?
I mean, strawberries just don't have a whole lot going for them in the first place.
Do they not?
No, that's the berries are, like, one of the foods that you eat when you're trying to lose weight, because it's, like, high volume, low calorie.
I thought strawberries were like good for you.
Some nutrients in there. There's fiber. Is there fiber in those?
Less than a gram.
Well, what's a serving size?
2 to 3 strawberries.
That's why it's so low, because the serving size is just 2 to 3 strawberries, which is basically nothing in terms of strawberries. Strawberries are also a good source of vitamin C.
See, I don't even have vitamin C on the label.
Well,
a gram of protein though.
Maybe from the chocolate.
Get those protein macros.
I feel like we as a society are a little over obsessed with protein.
I kind of do too.
I feel like protein in everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Does it make you feel fuller? Is that why?
I think it is like those macros. And it's like, oh, I can feel better about having this because it's protein. But it's like, I'm still drinking like a Starbucks drink. Like a little protein cold foam isn't going to suddenly make it good for me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still like a bunch of liquid calories.
Although every time I ever go to Brahms in my entire life, I'm like, this is a high protein snack. So I'm
good. It's a protein shake. Their shakes are protein shakes. It's like 40 some grams.
Got like tons of protein in them.
If you've never been to Brahms and you're able, you should go get a protein shake, aka a regular shake.
Yeah. Yeah. Their ice cream is like weirdly high in protein for some reason.
Because they use that A2 milk.
Sure.
Which is just the way that they process it. It's higher in protein.
Oh. This isn't like a raw milk is better for you kind of.
No, no, it's not. It's like Fairlife. You know Fairlife? It's like ultra-filtered milk. And in that process, it's like more of the protein in it than in just like regular milk. It's not raw milk. It's pasteurized.
Yeah. As you probably expected, we're pivoting into a nutrition podcast.
Uh-huh.
It was the next logical step
for us, really. Gonna call it I don't know, something really good. TBD.
Workout Palooza Fever.
Workout Palooza Fever. Transformation Fever.
we're gonna run a 25K.
Uh-huh. Sure.
I actually just learned a 25K existed, and I almost said to the person who was training for it, but why though?
I mean, it's just 15 miles.
It's too much. It's too many miles.
I mean, it's less than a marathon.
I finally was able to admit something to myself. I've probably said this on here before, but I told my wife one day, I was like, babe, I really like being inside more than being outside.
It's good to know about yourself.
Like, I've just kind of like, every time I've ever been like, let's go hiking, I've been like, oh yeah, sure, why not?
It's like Big Bang Theory. In retrospect, isn't that funny? It's like about smart people, but not for smart people. And it's like mean-spirited in a lot of its jokes. Like at the end of the day, it's like, oh, look at these funny nerds being nerds. But I really relate to Sheldon Cooper when they say, Sheldon, we should go outside. And he's like, but why? We've worked so long to perfect inside.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you're right, Sheldon Cooper. Just last week, I had some students that were like, you need to watch Young Sheldon. And I'm like, in my head, out loud, I was like, oh, maybe I'll get around to it. Inside, I was like, I will not be doing that.
No. No, maybe it's the greatest show of all time. We don't know.
I have some strong suspicions on how that shakes out.
I really like Emily Osmond. She's in it.
I don't know.
But yeah, I, you know, when I was young, people would talk about the grand majesty of nature and how, like, great they just love to be out in nature. And I'd be like, yeah, me too, because I thought I should. But now I'm old, and I'm just like, man, I would rather write a story about ninjas in a room that has no lights on than any of that.
Go outside. I do like Chacos, though.
I do.
The granola people figured those out.
Yeah, they did. Thanks, granola people. For people with sensory issues of their feet like me, Chacos are great. But we're not here to talk about nature or working out.
No, we tricked you. You thought for a second, maybe they did. Maybe they finally did it.
Maybe they finally did it. We're here, almost inevitably, I would suppose, to talk about comic books.
The comic books are the inevitable thing?
Well, that we're talking about them.
Yeah, that does feel inevitable on this show with the word comics in the name.
It's true. Cameron and I have both picked out some books. I have three. I believe he has four.
I have four.
I couldn't bring myself to read it, Cameron. I told you I got it, but I couldn't bring myself to read it.
That's okay. I read it for the both of us.
Maybe your review will really just kickstart my desire to read it. But
probably not.
By your username, I'm guessing not. So we both picked out a book that is going to be our best book that we're going to kind of review in depth. And then we're going to blurb over the other books that we read. Full disclosure, I went to read Batman number 3 and realized I never got Batman number 2. So I am a little behind, but I'm going to get Batman number 2 this Wednesday and catch up.
I mean, Batman number 3 really picks up right where Batman number 2 left off.
Does it?
Which is typically how stories go.
Well, I was a little confused. So I was like, what's happening? So I
mean, it was my best book and I did my best to explain to you what happened, but it seems you forgot.
Well, I guess I forgot the end. But all that to say, I will get Batman number 2. I still intend to read it. I'm just behind. Nice.
You're up first, though.
Oh, I am up first. Okay.
I was like, this is a long preamble.
No, I thought you were up first for some reason. My best book, I believe it's been my best book one other time, and I didn't pick Rook Exodus, mostly because it's kind of a transitional issue, but also just because I pick it all the time. My best book, I think it was my best book a while ago. I kind of lost track of it when they were doing the lead up to DCKO, but they've started a new year one storyline, and I was curious, so I started it again and loved it. JSA number
13.
JSA number 13 by Jeff Lemire. Let me grab that page. Oh, this is the by Jeff Lemire with art by Gavin Goudry. Probably not, but still. Yeah, I love the JSA, and I am generally a bit hesitant towards year ones. I know people love Batman year one. I believe I read it when it was coming out, if not like right after it came out. And I did not enjoy it.
Who did that one?
Let's see. I know people love it.
It wasn't Frank Miller, was it?
It was Batman year one. Yeah, it was Frank Miller.
Well, there's the issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just not a big fan. But Batman Year One was a huge success and really started the whole Year One kind of craze off. So I was kind of predisposed to not enjoy it. But Year One of the JSA was an interesting enough concept for me that I really wanted to pick this one up. I still really like Jeff Lemire's writing most of the time. So I gave it a shot, and I'm really glad I did. It's a lot of fun, especially if you love these characters. You get a lot of references early. In the first few pages, you get like a whole bunch of people in 1940s like appearance garb, perhaps doing stuff, and there's lots of fun Easter eggs for you to find. The newsboy is saying extra, extra. Hitler invades Britain.
Extra.
And he's being passed by a handsome blonde man. His hands in his pocket. We don't know if he has a green ring.
I think we know.
And Rick Tyler is announcing that he's looking into a big merger. Jay Garrick is describing to a class about heavy water, which we know heavy water is what will give him his powers, what has given him his powers. A woman tells archaeologist Carter Hall that all the gear is there. He's checked it twice. It's time for them to go. So yeah, you just get a lot of really fun, a lot of really fun moments. You see a blonde man arrive, and he's got kind of a conspiracy board, and he opens his cabinet, and it's the original The Atom suit. You kind of hear Carter Hall talk to Shaira Hall about how he got a map from Kent Nelson, and Kent kind of seems to have gone insane recently. Kent obviously will be Dr. Fate. A woman brings Jay Garrick lunch, and a distracted Rex Tyler tells them that he needs a night to think about the merger of his company. And then the next panel is in the Hourman suit. At the same time, we've got Alan Scott meeting with an old friend who seems to have outbid him on something. But he's also watching his back. He's very scared. He starts crying randomly at their meeting, and then he runs off, leaving Alan stunned. You have Hourman getting to where he's going and popping his Miragro, which will give him super strength for an hour, and starting his timer. Inside, you can see that Wesley Dobbs is already there, the Sandman. He's had a premonition that he needs to be there tonight. But also that if he goes there, he might die there. We see a javelin cut through the tent where the Hawks have set up a shop. Sportsmaster is attacking them. You see Shaira chase after him while Carter has an arrow in his arm, and then you see her get captured, and a like an evil agent lady point a gun at her head and ask her if she thinks she'll reincarnate again. You have a young student at Jay Garrick's university say, "I know you're the Flash." And Jay's like, "No, you don't. You don't know anything." And he's like, "I want to be a mystery man too." And he's like, "No, you don't. You don't have any reason to be." He's like, "Actually, I've got a genie in my pen. He's the one who told me you were the Flash." And he's like, "Hey, like, knock this off. This is all nonsense. Don't go spouting this nonsense to anybody." And Jay runs off. You've got the Atom breaking into a illicit poker game, and them making fun of him for being short before he trashes them all and goes into their basement to find a Nazi plan. Because of course it's Nazis. And the plan is called Committee for a Pure America. Sunday, August 4th, 1685. Broad Street East. And you just see Hawkman running after Hot Girl, not knowing if she's alive or dead. We don't either. Hourman and Sandman have found some kind of weird science lab. Jay Garrick is toasting with the woman from earlier. Alan is going to check on his friend that he just met. And the book ends with a flash of green as Alan finds his friend from earlier with a knife in his chest.
Oh, no.
And I know that seems kind of, like, disconnected, but that's what it is. It's vignettes. It's where they all are. And I really just love it. I love seeing where they all are. I love these characters. I love the mystery men kind of thing of this. They're not public superheroes. They're very hush-hush, almost kind of mobsterish in a way about their secret identities, especially the way Jay does it. He's like, you don't know anything, Shay. But I love the time period we're doing here. I really love, like, we've set up an interesting thread for all of them. Like, there's villains after the Hawks. Wesley and our man are in this business trying to uncover its secrets. We've got Johnny Thunderbolt trying to become a mystery man with the Flash. It's really interesting and fun stuff with some of the greatest characters. I mean, give me the Hawks, the Hawkman and Hawkgirl any day, and I'm happy. Wesley Dodds, Jay Garrick, Alan Scott, Our Man. I just love all these characters so much. And to see them kind of in their prime, it's just a lot of fun.
Nice.
I love this book. It got me really excited for its future. I don't think I knew that people made fun of Al Pratt for being short, which I think is kind of a funny thing. That's the Atom. I just really love this book. I'm excited to see where the story goes. And I thought it was a lot longer, but the ending is a backup for a book I'm going to read anyway.
That's how I felt with several of my DC books. I was like, oh, this is hefty. I got a lot left. Oh, nope. It's the Static Shock Batman Beyond crossover.
Yeah, which I am looking forward to.
It does seem like it'll be fun. All right.
Yeah. So JSA number 13, highly recommend it. You need to know nothing going in. So if you've ever been interested in the JSA and want like an introduction to their origins, I highly recommend it.
Nice.
If you do not love the JSA, you'll just be like, ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ooh. All right. Well, I'm also bringing a number 13 to the table today. Chance is going to eat his snacks, as you already said. But I'm talking about Absolute Superman number 13. Just an old favorite. And this isn't the start of a new arc. It's kind of towards the end of the arc. And this is by Jason Aaron and Rafa Sandoval, still our main creative team. Working on this book. And at the end of the last book, the Lazarus Corporation, one of the largest corporations in the world, began its attack on the city of Smallville, or the town of Smallville, perhaps. So the book starts off that way, and it's like 6 weeks ago, and the tanks, because of course they have tanks, are rolling into Smallville, and all the people are there with their guns, because it's Kansas, ready to defend their town. And they're all about to be run down, but then who should swoop in and start saving the day but Superman? And all throughout this book, Superman has had this cape called Soul, who was like created by his parents, and its primary directive is to protect Superman. And Superman's like, no, now you're protecting Smallville. And so he sets his cape to do that, and it makes like a gigantic crystal barrier around the city. And there's like caves and mines beneath the town that the people are able to utilize to escape. But Smallville is just basically being like bombed by this corporation's jets, and these tanks are all coming in. You're like, a corporation would never do that, because they're just like people, and they're just big people. And they're not mean. They're not mean, right? So that's how we know this is fantasy, because
he's wrong.
Corporations love us, Chance, right? Right, they love us.
They'd kill us for a buck.
They already do. But then we cut to now, and the world doesn't seem to know what's happening in Smallville. And we see Lois Lane and Superman's friend Jimmy Olsen, and they are basically trying to send out a broadcast to the rest of the world to say, like, hey, here's what's going on in Smallville. So they sneak into the public broadcasting center and are sending out the message. And then what should happen but a bunch of Lazarus Corps mechs start chasing after them. They're on the run with Lana Lang, and they're riding on horses, and it's just majestic, and they're about to be shot. But then who, again, should come and save the day but Superman?
Superman!
And there's like a little flashback where they're like, when did you know, like Jimmy, because Jimmy worked for the Omega Men, which was, turns out the leader of the Omega Men was actually Talia al Ghul. And so she was like actually working for her father, Ra's al Ghul, head of Lazarus Corp.
There was never a like tiger themed alien with a gun.
No, sadly. Omega Men? Sadly not. And Lois, of course, was an agent of the Lazarus Corp. And they're having this conversation. It's like, when did you know that you were like on the wrong side? Like, when did you know that you'd done something, like you'd made the wrong choice? And she's like, I think we both, like, I'm thinking I realized it at the same moment you did. And then it's like the moment, like the day that I met Superman is when I realized like I'd been doing the wrong thing. And then, you know, he's just like punching everything and just saving people, flying around, saving everyone. That's good Superman, flying around, saving everyone. He's like talking to, it cuts back like 5 weeks ago, and Superman's talking to the people. He's like, there's these mines. You'll be safe there. We need to get there. We kind of see Superman have this moment of crisis of his conscience. Where one of the men in the town's like, Superman, I need to apologize. Like, I'm the one who initially turned you in to like Lazarus Corp when he first came to Smallville the first time. And he was like staying with the Kents. He's like, I turned you in. Like, I'm sorry. I just saw something that was weird, and I did what I thought was supposed to.
Who was it?
Just some random guy. Let me see if he even has a name. Jed Cochran. He was the mailman.
Okay. I feel like I've heard that name in Superman.
Maybe. But he's just like, he's apologizing. He's like, you saved my family. Even after I screwed yours over, and I'm really sorry. And thank you for that. And Superman's like walking away. But then Superman's like, okay. And he comes back and he's like, thanks. Well, not thanks now, but he's like, we all need your help because like everybody needs to be contributing. So be a part of that. And they shake hands and we see Superman just thinking to himself, don't crush his hand. Don't crush his hand, as he's like shaking his hand and forgiving him for just the terrible things. Then Ra's al Ghul and Talia are having a conversation, and they're like, why isn't Brainiac just giving you his kryptonite and you just go take care of this? He's like, well, Brainiac's doing something. He's disposed at the moment, and I have a plan for the kryptonite. And then we cut back to where he's fighting the mechs again. He's just like beating them all up, and then blows up the mechs. Then the soldiers are there, and he's like, there's kids in these mines and elderly and like old people and sick people. Like, you're dropping bombs on them. Get out of here. And so they do. Well, actually what he does is he says, the Ross family's pig farm is 3 miles that way. When I come by there in an hour, I'd better see you sitting in that slop thinking about what you've done. So, you know, he put him in timeout. But he's just been fighting, and everything is like kind of at a stalemate. But then suddenly Brainiac unleashes what his part of the plan was, and he is destroying the barrier and destroying Soul, who was created, of course, by Superman's parents to protect him. And so Brainiac is doing that. Superman is upset. He's trying to attack the Lazarus Corp as they're shooting their cannons, and he kind of gets in the way. And then Ra's al Ghul comes, and he has a big, giant, glowing kryptonite sword. Because his whole thing, he was trying to brainwash Superman into thinking that he was his son. So he would be the son of Ra's al Ghul, and like part of the Lazarus Corporation, and they would basically take over the world for the good of everyone. But, you know, but he's just like, before we're done, you're going to kneel before me in the blood of those you love and beg to be my son, as he's got this big kryptonite sword that looks very cool. And that's where we end the Battle of Kansas Part 2. Corporations are bad. Who knew?
This is very different for Ra's al Ghul. He's not an eco-terrorist.
No, he's just a regular. Well, I guess he's a corpo terror, but from the corporate side.
Corpos, they sicken me.
Corpo pigs. But there it was. It was really good.
All right, you have three?
I have three. One of them's the same as yours.
Yes.
So you have two?
Yes.
I'll let you talk about the one.
All right. You go first then.
Okay. So I did read Night Fight number one.
I tried.
It was okay. What?
I was just saying I tried, guys. I really did.
He did. It was okay. You know, Batman dies in DCKO. But he had on a suit, like an apocalyptic armor, that when he is like, doesn't send a signal back every so often, it just like teleports him. Like if he's like trapped or something, because he was turned into like a statue. So it seems. For some, I don't remember that being a thing. But he breaks out and he's teleported back to the Earth, but he's like at some future Gotham for some reason. We don't know. It's like all future-y. I don't know why I'm going through all the details. But then it turns out that Dick Grayson has sort of taken over the mantle of Batman and has like a whole crew of Robins that he's trained up. He's like, anybody can be a Robin. He's like, you were too short-sighted. You were too controlling. And you couldn't accept that anybody could do the job as good as you or better than you. And I've beaten you before, old man, and I'll do it again. And then they fight.
Why does he need to fight him? Why can't he be like, oh, my friend that I love?
Because I don't know. There's something weird happening. I don't know if I'll keep reading to find out what the weird thing is.
Are the Robins cool?
They're dead. Robins? The original Robins are dead. We were revealed at the end. The Robins, though, that we see are pretty cool looking. Here's the Robins.
Ooh.
Is that a sword?
Do we know anything about them?
No.
Oh. Because like that, I wonder if that first one's Signal and if that other one's...
But it's this world, it's like anybody that wants to help can be trained to be a Robin. He said they have a whole support system and like a community built up to train people to be heroes. Which seems cool. I want that.
Yeah.
Maybe Dick Grayson's right. Batman sucks.
Maybe. I tried out and very much enjoyed all three of my books. I could have been best book this week. But I tried out and very much enjoyed. You didn't give the writer and artist are.
Oh, I did I? Joshua Williamson and Dan Mora.
Oh, that's sad. That's a great team.
I think if it wasn't like hemmed in by DCKO and could like be its own thing,
mm-hmm.
that'd be maybe more interesting. I mean, I enjoyed DCKO.
But you didn't enjoy this as much.
But I feel like sometimes it's like, I have to somehow fit my cool story idea into this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel limiting.
Yeah. Especially if you don't even know why Dick Grayson's attacking him.
Yes. I mean, that's what the author knows.
I tried out and very much enjoyed Planet She-Hulk number one.
Planet She-Hulk.
This is by Stephanie Phillips, who's also writing the Spider-Gwen comic I'm enjoying. With artist by Aaron Cruder. This is a great introduction. You know, even if you've only seen Thor Ragnarok and you kind of get a sense for Sakaar there, it's a very different Sakaar from there for sure, but the idea of like there's this planet that Hulk was a gladiator on and eventually he took it over and became king, which I know didn't happen to me, but and then I guess Hulk's son became king. I don't know the whole.
Even though there was a son of Hulk.
There's actually a few sons of Hulk. There's like Hulkling and Sakaar. So I don't know everything. But basically, Hulk's son died, and now the who rules Sakaar is kind of up in the air. So Hulk kind of temporarily took it back over, but he had to go for some reason. So he left She-Hulk in charge. And he said that she would only be in charge for 5 days. Because if you know She-Hulk, she's not like... This isn't her thing. She's a lawyer on Earth. She's not like a spacefarer. The very first thing... one of the first panels is Hulk saying, "You have my word, 5 days." And then like it shows like, day 6, this happened. Day 7, this happened. Day 8, this happened. Day 9, this happened. So she's obviously been here much longer than she anticipated. And basically, she's got to go to this wedding of this Sakaarian war hero, where she's going to be the guest of honor, and it's the guest of honor's job to have a gladiator match with some giant red dragon. And she's like, oh, I can use that to get my ship to get off this planet and let them fight out. I know Hulk didn't want them to have a war of succession, but I don't care about any of this, so I'm going to let them have a war of succession.
Might as well.
Yeah, this just isn't her thing. I thought the thought bubbles that addressed the audience very subtly, this is how I like fourth wall breaking being done. Not as in your face about it, because She-Hulk is a fairly famous fourth wall breaker. But this does it in a very subtle way. And She-Hulk is just very likable in this. She's very, like, grounded, down to earth. She's doing the right thing. But also, like, she's just a New York attorney, and she doesn't want to get, like, caught up in this war of succession. And even she's like, people are going to start backstabbing each other and having sex with their sisters any day now. Like, kind of referencing Game of Thrones.
They do that there.
it's a lot of fun. I really like She-Hulk. I've really been enjoying these like politic adventures lately, where like there are alliances and broken alliances and murders. So I've really been enjoying that lately, and this is giving me that, but also with superhero antics and yeah, I'm down for it. She-Hulk, Planet She-Hulk number one, very fun.
All right. My next book is Batman number 3 by Matt Faction and Jorge Jimenez. It still continues to be really great.
This is the first time it hasn't been your best book.
Yes, I suppose that's true. I think I was partly wanting to give it a break.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I've been just talking about Batman a lot the last several weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to take a break from that. I'm a Batman guy, apparently, as much as I'm like, I'm not a big Batman guy. And then every week I'm like, but have you read the latest adventures of Batman? But it's good. Things are happening. There's some nice moments some well-written moments between like Bruce and Damian. Yeah, and just the dominoes are kind of starting to fall in some ways. It's really good. Got a cool bat suit in this one that I really like. And the Riddler is in it.
Ooh, always fun when he shows up.
Yeah, it's like a very interesting, he's not really different from the normal Riddler, but just the way that he is portrayed, I like. Much better than Immortal Legends Batman.
Yeah. You know, I've done a little looking, and things are very mixed on that. But there are some people who really like it, and I want to really like it.
I think if it wasn't billed as what it was billed at.
Mm-hmm. More of a mystery in space than like
Toku at all. Because yeah. It's not.
Yeah. My last book and your last book is
our last book.
Rook Exodus number 8. You got a better cover than me. I got the last one. I didn't. Beggars can be choosers. Yeah, love this book. It's a little transitional. We knew from last book that Bloodhound was down this hole and
that there were spiders there.
Yeah, that the Spider Warden was down there. But the characters don't know that, so this is them kind of descending chasing after him. At some point, they get attacked by Bloodhound, and their animals, who are still up top, get attacked by Bloodhound's dogs. And then the coolest character in this entire book. Although Rook with this gun right here in this panel is pretty dang cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
But then the real hero of Rook Exodus, which will I'm certainly be called Stag Exodus eventually, pops out and saves them from Bloodhound, and his deer come in and just skewer all the wolves with their horns.
It's really cool. The art is still just like so well done. Every single bit is just so lush. The art by Jason Fabok.
Yeah, and all of the
writing. It's just
all the characters are so cool. Uh-huh. Like looking, yes, but also just like, I don't know.
Acting. Cool being. I feel like the looks really speak to my like late 2000s, like, heart.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, it's very edgy.
It is very edgy.
Like, respectfully. You know, the masks and the leather and the spikes and the pauldrons and the more spikes and just all of it is very, very much of a specific time in my memory. And it's just, it's very good.
I really kind of thought at first that Matterhorn, this new goat girl, was going to be kind of just Direwolf again. But she's got kind of more of a, like, Nordic thing going on with, like, an axe on her hip and kind of, like, wild blonde hair. And her suit looks, like, fully functional but also kind of like fantasy armor, where Direwolf's is, like, all sleek and hunter-y.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's so cool. And, it like, in the middle of this book, she, like, headbutts Bloodhound, and it's just a sick little panel of her, like, throwing her head into his chest. And I just loved it. I think this is the coolest book coming out right now.
It is very cool.
For the reasons you said, but also, I mean, Stag, come on.
Yep, he looks very cool.
Also, I really like the moment. It's a really silent moment. But the animals are all walking silently, trying to go to the rendezvous point to meet them. And all of the animals kind of hear something. And then the pig kind of zooms in on Swine's helmet. And I just thought that was a delightful little moment of, like, him reflecting on his friend.
Mm-hmm.
I hope there's a new Swine soon, and that Pumbaa gets his...
How Pumbaa got his Swine back.
How Pumbaa got his friend. Yeah, love this book.
I do like that they call the warthog Pumbaa.
Yes.
Like, you know, some things just transcend time and space.
And then at the end of it, we learn Stag is attacking Bloodhound because Bloodhound killed his wife.
Just kind of rude of him, honestly.
It's super rude. And it's cool that Stag seems to speak a different language. I don't know which one it is. Maybe Japanese?
It just looked made up.
No.
No, it's not. I didn't look at it very closely.
Yeah, it's real. It's real.
It's Japanese.
Okay.
Perhaps.
I don't really know the difference between Japanese, Korean, and Chinese.
I'm just recognize maybe it is not Japanese. Maybe it's not Japanese. Maybe that's Chinese. I recognize a few characters, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're exclusive to one.
But yeah, that is Rook Exodus by Jeff Johns and Jason Fabek, with art by Brad Anderson.
It's always a good time.
And yeah, it's... I mean, what do you even say? It's Rook Exodus. It's great.
It is. All right, well, that's our books and our book blurbs. So we're going to take a short break and have an ad, totally. And
we'll be right back. Get your True Fru.
Get your True Fru on, boo.
Ooh, True Fru, boo. Man, you can't do something that good. They're not paying us.
Yeah, they could, though.
They could.
We'll bill you. What if we bill them?
Yeah. We did an ad for you. Where's our money?
Did you notice an uptick in your sales? That was probably because of us.
Yeah. Oh, your sales went down. That wasn't us.
Oh, that's not out yet. My bad.
Cameron, go buy like 50 bags, and I will too.
In this economy?
And then we'll send them a letter, be like, you notice your stuff going up? We did an ad for you.
It's a little bit like inside baseball.
They don't got no nothing.
They don't, and they won't. We'll delete this episode. And we're back. Welcome back.
And we're back.
That was a good ad.
Yeah. This is our B segment where we talk about some kind of nerdy topic or go over viewer mail, but it's Cameron's topic this week.
It's my topic because I was looking, I was like, I know our first episode came out in November last year, but I couldn't remember when. So I looked. It was a brilliant idea on my part. I just scrolled back to see when our first episode came out. And it came out 1 year ago. When this episode comes out, 1 year ago tomorrow. So... this comes out on the 11th. assuming I remember to put it out. And on the 12th of 2024 was our very first episode. So we've done it. We've done a year. So congratulations. Chance, you get a bonus. 16% above your normal paycheck from this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Bonus, yes. You I only took a 13 so that I could get you some more.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We did it. 1 year. It's very exciting. And I think there's some stock options in it for you, too.
The stock in what? True Fruit?
In us.
Oh, in us. Okay. I didn't know we were on the market.
It's sort of like an equity. So if we ever do go public, you would have quite a few shares.
Equity and ivory.
But what I wanted to do, I texted Chance this, so hopefully he prepared. But I just thought it would be fun because we've been back in comics for like a year now, right? Mm-hmm. Reading regularly, weekly. And I thought what we should do is just bring our five favorite like books that we've read so far. Not individual books, unless it was like that's what you were thinking, but like it'd be like Batman or you know this, or if it's just like an arc, even like this particular arc of this book I really enjoyed. And so this is just the time where we are going to remember all of those.
Remember 5th November.
Yes.
It was just like 5 days ago, guys.
That was. We forgot. We didn't actually. I texted you.
You did.
Mm-hmm. But I'll go first. Unless you want to go first. Do you want to go first?
I'll go second.
Okay. So I'm just going to say the book, just some of the things that I enjoyed about it, or still do enjoy about it, because these are all things that I'm... Well, this first one's not, but it's not intentionally that I'm not reading it anymore. I'm not reading it. I'll explain. But it is The Power Fantasy, which...
Well, I was so surprised when you were like, I'm going to go trade on it.
Well, the reason that I'm going trade is for two things. The first one is there were no issues of the next issue anywhere that I've looked. And two, they do a really good job with their trades, where they release them and it's cheaper than the collected issues. And it's like they'll release an arc and then the next month, instead of just continuing, they just release the trade for the previous arc. Mm-hmm. So you can just read it all at once. And I think it would read really well just reading it all together also. But it ended in a really interesting spot. But I just think I'm blanking on who it is that works on that book at the moment. So I'm looking that up real quick. Because it's been the same crew the whole time. Kieran Gillen on writing, and then Caspar Wingyard doing the art. And really just both of them, I feel like, are really cooking on the series. If you've missed any of my talking about it, essentially it is a look at superheroes, where in most superhero books, you know, it's like the point is the fighting. It's like you want to see the superheroes fight it out. Against the supervillains or against whatever. But this, like in this world, because I mean, super powered people are so strong. Like there's like six of them that are like called atomics, because they are like, if they were to do something, they could wipe out billions of people, or potentially like the whole world. So it's like, if they fight, that's the fail state of the world. Not like if so-and-so loses, it's like, if they fight at all, we're just doomed. And so it's really just like a lot of more like politicking and like things being revealed, and but in like a very interesting way. And it's just told a lot through flashbacks, and then it all is kind of leading up to this moment in 1999 as Etienne, kind of the main, he's sort of an antagonist. Everyone's sort of an antagonist. He's one of the main antagonists. He just like starts setting some things in motion, kills the president, you know, like you do.
Thank you.
And just a lot of things start spinning out of control from that point. And the other super like atomics are like, well, what are we going to do about it? And some things happen. They do some things. But it's really good, really well done, well written, beautiful art. You should read Power Fantasy. And it's easy to do, and it's collected trades.
Oh, good. How many trades are out?
Just two. Just the first two arcs through like 11 issues.
Okay. My first one is going to be my most recent one. and one that is not finished yet. So that's probably why it is so low on here. But I am just starting in Action Comics 1087, Mark Waid's Action Comics run, where he is going over the life of Superboy. I just think is excellent. I'm a sucker for a what's the true meaning of Superman story anyway. But to put that with great writing and just Superman really having to balance that identity, which I always like, and just being a kid making the right choices. Like, I mean, a teen. I think he's a sophomore in high school. But just seeing him be like, I can punch you out of this place, but I can't. That would be wrong. And be frustrated by that. I really love it. I think it's great. And I think it's like very relatable because we've all wanted to be a kid with superpowers. And I think there's a part of me, right, that's like anyone who had super strength, the minute like someone cut them off in traffic, they'd like grab their car and throw it. There's like that, and that's kind of what the deconstruction of superheroes is about. A lot of it, like Watchmen, it's kind of like that same idea. Like
power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. The Boys, that's what it's all about. To a large degree, a lot of Invincible,
mm-hmm.
Is about that. There's no end to the deconstructions of superheroes that kind of resonate with that idea,
particularly Superman.
Yeah, and it's almost always centered on like a Superman-esque character.
Like, what if Superman went evil? It's like, oh, we're doing this again.
Yeah. Yes. But
I'm going to do one where it's called "What if evil Superman went good?"
You're going to deconstruct the deconstruction. It's brilliant. But yeah. I think just like the balls that it takes, you know, that go back to the Superman movie, kindness is the real punk rock. But the balls that it takes to be like, no, kids normally try to do the right thing. Actually, mm-hmm. they don't just like do the wrong thing because they can get away with it with their powers. Like, people are generally good and they're trying to do good things.
Yeah.
And that's what Superman's doing. And he's not perfect. He's very human. But he ends up making the good choices because that's what people do. I really like that.
I like it too. Speaking of good people, my next book is about a good person. And that, honestly, I was trying to think, should I break it down into an arc? And I really just can't, because I think the whole thing start to now, has just been really excellent. And that is Absolute Wonder Woman. I feel like I've been reading several of the Absolute books, but I think it's easy to say that this one is my favorite. This comes from a person who hasn't really read a lot of Wonder Woman. It's never really been a book that I've picked up all that much. I read some of it in the New 52 and thought it was good, but just haven't like spent a whole lot of time with it. Even though it's like a lot of things that I do enjoy, women, Greek mythology, wandering, just a lot of good things. But I think Absolute Wonder Woman is just this really interesting take on the character, where it's like, you know, Absolute Batman, it's like, what if Batman was poor, essentially, and like grew up on the rougher side of the track, so you still get Batman, but he's just like brutal and like, not like, he doesn't kill people. I mean, he killed some of those white supremacists, but you know, is that really people? It's hard to say. and like Superman is like very interesting too, because he's just like older as everything goes haywire. So he's just like, there's a lot of trauma that he's working through, and he's like seeing this really broken world, but still trying to do good. But Diana, you know, we even get to see a lot through flashbacks of like, she was raised in hell, as opposed to in like paradise, and is still just this like incredibly kind and caring person. And we get to see that play out in just the things that she does, where she's just like, really just caring for people and trying to rescue people and to save people in a way that benefits them. And I don't know, that just feels like, yeah, Absolute Batman, I feel like gets a lot of the hype because it's like so cool. But I feel like Absolute Wonder Woman is the hero that we actually need, if that makes sense. It's like that's who we should be looking up to more than like this one who's just like brutal and wild, rather than the one who is like kind, despite every reason not to be.
And she's got a cool sword.
And she has a cool sword. A very big sword at one point. Like the size of a build, like a skyscraper.
Okay, is it time for my number four?
I didn't really put mine in order.
Well, I didn't either.
But yes.
It took me a minute to find the exact time. I know that a lot of people were really down on it. But that's not going to stop me. Because I really enjoyed the most recent volume of Daredevil, issues 1 through 19. I think it definitely did fall off in the next two issues. It's one of those things I don't really want to see Daredevil fight a fungus monster. But issues 1 through 19, I think, were really quite special. And just they were a lot of fun to kind of get reintroduced to this character. And it was just like, in my opinion, just very classic Daredeviling. I don't know. He wasn't a god. He wasn't Heimdall. These are all things that have happened to him recently. He was just a guy trying his best. And by trying his best, his life was falling apart. And he was trying to do his best not to have it fall apart. But yeah, it was hard. And confronting his own kind of self-obsession about blaming himself for that. I do believe that this was so unpopular that there is not a current plan to have a Daredevil ongoing for a little while.
Oh, no.
That's unfortunate, but I really think issues 1 through 19 are very worth your time.
What a bummer. People just don't know what's good. My next one, I don't think anything else that I'm going to talk about today, none of what I've talked about so far, is also a surprise, but a book that I really enjoyed, and I've enjoyed especially the new characters that it brings to the old characters, and that's Uncanny X-Men, just Gail Simone's run that she's done thus far, since like the new status quo for X-Men. And so the book, this is the book with the Louisiana X-Men, including, it's about Calico. And Calico's great. Death Dream is also great. Just a big fan of the two of them. And so, yeah, just kind of seeing sort of just that heart of what I liked about X-Men. I think it was about a year ago when I got the Marvel app for a week and I read a bunch of Wolverine and the X-Men. And it was that same kind of thing. It's like there's just a focus on the students in the school. And there is that in this too, in Uncanny X-Men. It's like we're not in our normal place, but we have like our students and our charges that we are training to be like the next heroes. And it's really fun. Like it's just fun. Is it all perfect? No. It can be a little messy sometimes. I feel like it was a bit of a slow and rough start, but I think Gail Simone's a really talented writer with a lot of ideas. And so it's good to see her take the reins of an X-Men book.
I was like, oh no, I can't unmute. Okay. My third one, like you said, I don't think there's going to be any surprises here. But my third one is just Arcbound. I think mostly in retrospect, it's great. It's one of those that you have to wait a long time between issues, and each issue leaves you wanting more. But I think art that leaves you wanting more is good. And now that we've kind of finished the first big arc, and you could argue the first big two arcs, it's just a lot of fun. I wish the world building was a little bit better, but we're doing so much with the adventure that we just can't. But I'm loving this book. Every time I get it, I'm like, ooh, good. Big space adventure for me.
A big space adventure.
What?
You do love a big space adventure.
I was trying to find what issue Arcbound is on.
Six?
Huh?
Have they done through six?
Is that it? I don't remember. But yeah, I think now that the volume one is, it's either out or coming out. I think it comes out on the 13th. So just a few days. I really think it is so very worth reading.
It looks like Arcbound number 6 came out at the beginning of October.
Okay. Arcbound number 6. It looks like November 13th. So just a few days is volume one. Like I said, it's just so worth your time. And I think while I am going to continue to get it as single issues,
it would be good all bound into a single arc.
Yeah, I think it will be better that way.
You could say. Nice. Old Tom Hardy.
I think I'm wrong about when it's coming out.
Yeah, I think I saw January. It looked like November 13th is when the first issue came out.
That's
last year. Because it was like right about the time we started.
Yeah, so there's 12 issues planned. And I think it's going to be in 2 volumes. So yeah, I think January. I think you're right.
We are at the halfway mark. My last two are both series that have wrapped up. One because it finished telling the story. The other because the world is cruel. The first I'm going to do the first one, which is Batman and Robin Year One by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. That I feel like I've like this podcast started partly because I read this comic book. I was like, Chance, I read some Batman comic books and they're really good. I think it's just such a joy to read. It's just absolutely beautiful to behold. I'm seeing when the trade comes out. Surely soon. Year One, DC Comics.
Mark Waid's second entry on the list. Great job, Mark.
Way to go, Mark. Proud of you. Will there be another?
Mark Waid wrote Kingdom Come, right?
Did he? I don't know. It looks like the trade paperback and the hardcover both come out in December. December 16th.
Yeah. Mark Waid wrote Kingdom Come, the greatest comic book story ever told.
Man, so. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I know he was a big target of like Ethan Van Shriver's like big comics are woke now thing, but I doubt anything came of that. No. He seems to be getting plenty of work.
That's stupid.
Yeah, it is. Sad because I used to really like Ethan Van Shriver's art.
Not anymore.
Well, I still like his art.
His art's fine. Is he the guy who can't draw feet? Is that the meme?
I don't know. I'm not a memer. You look it up. I'll do my number two. It's pretty easy to talk about because we talked about issue 2 of volume 2 today. Great news. This one's super accessible. You can get the volume 1 trade. It's available now. And then
it was Rob Liefeld that can't draw.
Oh, yes. Okay. That makes sense. and then you can get issue 7 and 8 and you're all caught up with Rook Exodus. Just like Cameron said, this is one of those books that got us to do this podcast. I'm not going to spend much time on it because we just spent time praising it. The first 2 issues are super misleading as to what this book series is going to be.
I remember it took me a long time. I like read the first 2 and it's like, because I borrowed them all from you. You're like, this is great. And I'm just like, I don't know if I want this.
Yeah, the first 2 issues are basically set up for the arcs that he's going to have in the next 4. so if you are getting the trade, just know that the first third of it is a little misleading.
Yeah.
But where it ends up is a super cool place. That book
I was happy to be misled.
Yep. That we both, Cameron and I, just spent a bunch of time glazing this issue. and I think rightfully so. I'm loving Rook Exodus. I've read quite a bit of Ghost Machine now, and Rook Exodus is just far and away my favorite part.
I almost talked about Halo or Hornsby and Halo on this list. I'm not saying this as a way to sneak an extra one in, but I think I think Rook Exodus is like the best Ghost Machine book of the ones that I've read. Mm-hmm. And because I think Halo and Hornsby, I can never remember what the order is. Hornsby and Halo, I think, is just a little less consistent compared to Rook Exodus. Even though we were like, the beginning's a little slow, I think it needed to, like you said, it needed to happen for what happened next to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It matter.
The end of the second issue is so weird because it basically destroys everything you've done for the first two issues. In like glorious flame, and I remember just being like, what do you even do in issue three? Like, this is stupid.
You start telling the story that you wanted to tell.
Yeah. It was almost like Geoff Johns was like, I don't want to tell the story either. Boom. So
tricked you. Yeah, but it is great. So my last book series is the one that the world is cruel and took away from us. And that's New Champions. What a great run. 8 issues of perfection, honestly. I think it's another similar to several other books that I've mentioned. I just feel like it was just a joyful time. Just a fun team. I like seeing that like inexperienced team kind of find their own place in the world. Sort of try to make a name for themselves. And it was just a fun cast of characters in sort of an impossible situation. And I just had a really nice time with it. And then they canceled it because they hate good things at Marvel. They do. They just hate them, but they'll double ship Amazing Spider-Man every month. but we can't have nice new things. I don't know what else to say. Again, I've talked about New Champions so much over the last year.
Yeah. I read the first 3 issues and I loved it. Cameron stole the issue that I was trying to read, so I couldn't continue. But I really loved it too. I would have loved that book to go on and more of the characters that were in that first arc to be explored. The Phasma, the girl Hulk Iron Fist.
Yeah, she's not really in it. The Ghost Rider Roller Derby Girl is.
Yeah. Well,
she doesn't get like a big arc or anything. But
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I would have liked it to have gone on long enough that it could have like.
Yeah, could have explored some of the characters more.
Could have explored some of those characters more. My last one is probably the least surprising thing you've ever. You will know doing this podcast. I've been championing.
I'm already typing it down.
Yeah. I've been championing it. The trade came out October 8th. I am certain of that. And I believe a one-shot for it. I was trying to find when the one-shot comes out, but I'm having trouble doing so. Oh, here it is. January 28th. A one-shot is coming out to kind of wet our whistles for Volume 2. But it's Bug Wars. Issues 1 through 6.
It was always Bug Wars.
It was always Bug Wars. You didn't say Absolute Superman, did you?
No.
Well, we got Jason Aaron on the list anyway. With Jason Aaron's passion project, Bug Wars. Every week when I got it, I wanted to read it, and every week when I finished it, I wanted to read it again. My wife, I talked about it so much that my wife read them and really enjoyed them. Now that I know that the trade is out, I'm probably going to buy it, even though I have all the issues, just so I don't have to ever go hunt for them.
Chance has got issues.
Yeah. It's Bug Wars. It's so great. You want to go on an adventure? You want some violence? You want a deconstruction of fantasy?
A little isekai action?
Some isekai action, yeah. Man, I just... Why? If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't read Bug Wars... Cameron, why? What's wrong with you?
Technically, I'm not listening to this podcast. I'm living this podcast.
I guess that's true. On air, I just bought myself the trade. It'll be here tomorrow.
Nice. Happy for you.
I'll lend it to you.
Okay. I'll let you.
I'll lend you the trade. Bug Wars, the best thing I've read.
Yes. All in all, I think it's been a fun year of reading.
Yeah.
Just some good stories, good times. tried some things out, things I might never have expected, things I might not have known existed. I read like a cozy murder, not even, it wasn't even a murder mystery, a cozy mystery in comic book form.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty fun. I thought there was going to be murder in it. There wasn't. That was disappointing.
I spent most of my life reading DC comics and with some X-Men thrown in there. And occasionally when something from Marvel caught my fancy. And I've really learned in the last year that give me someone going on an adventure.
Uh-huh.
Give me factions and politics. And apparently I'm a sucker for it.
Apparently you are. Yeah, there's just lots of good stuff out there. Yeah, so just step outside your normal comfort zone.
Yes, I've heard that the first 12 issues of the new TMNT run are amazing. I want to check those out. The Massive Verse is definitely worth checking out. If you can get all the issues, that's Radiant Black. Radiant Black kind of got Cameron and I both back into comics a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Neither of us are actively reading it because just behind.
Well, yeah.
And I've read the first two trades and I have the third trade, but I've not read it.
I've read the first three trades. that's a fantastic thing to read. I've heard people love what's going on with Transformers comics and Void Rivals right now. There's just so many things to read that we're not even talking about. So go read. Tell us what you're reading. Tell us what you're loving.
Yes, do tell us. And you can tell us at comicspalooza.bsky.social or sending us an email to hotcomicpulls@gmail.com. If you also want to congratulate us on our 1 year birthday,
yeah,
you can do that too. You can send cash or check. Just email us and we'll get you the address for that.
Or
if don't you send cash like in the
send
mail.
Us a cake.
A cake.
I finished this season of Great British Baking Show right before we started doing this podcast. So I very much want a cake right now. So I didn't get one for my birthday.
We had cake tonight because it's my son's birthday today. He's 10.
But it probably wasn't good cake then.
Yeah, no, it was Walmart cake.
Yeah.
It was like chocolate.
I want someone to bake I don't know. What's that cake where you make all the holes in it and you pour the gelatin sauce on it?
Poke cake?
Sure. I don't know.
I don't know if that's considered a fancy cake.
It's a good cake. I said good.
Oh, good cake. Good cake is good.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, a friend of our family's made me an authentic Black Forest cake for my birthday. And it was the bomb.
Authentic.
Oh, yes. So send us cake.
And tell us your favorite cake.
Yeah, and tell us your favorite cake.
But I think that brings us to everyone's favorite part of the show, which is Uncle's One More Thing. One more thing. And I'm up first because you went first at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I was debating what to bring. And so I think I'm going to secretly bring two things.
Oh, no.
But one is going to be short. And that is just the current season of Fortnite that is Simpsons. I've never watched The Simpsons, but the season's a lot of fun. The whole map is just The Simpsons. So it just looks like the cartoon. And it's very fun. And I'm having a nice time.
Okay.
And two, it's also fitting that this is the 1 year anniversary of this podcast, because in our very first episode, we talked a little bit about Dragon Age, the Veil Guard. And just in the past couple of weeks, I picked that back up and have been playing it. And I'm just having a really nice time. I texted Chance, was it yesterday?
I think it was Saturday.
It was one of the 2 days. And I was just like, I think I finished what is considered act one of Veil Guard, and the last section is the coolest thing that I've ever done in any Dragon Age game.
Okay.
Just epic, but not in a, sometimes you can play the opening level of a game and it feels very epic. And you're like, this is really cool, but I don't really know what's going on. This is epic and I understand what's happening and just crazy things are happening. And it's very cool. And especially based on the way that I picked my character, I just felt the stakes were really high for it, which wasn't intentional on my part, but it's just very cool. And just some of the broader world building revelations that have happened thus far, it again just feels very very cool. It explains why dwarves can't access the Fade. and don't have magic in a way. And it's like very interesting.
We already knew that.
We didn't. Not that I know of, but we know like what caused it specifically. And I just like my little cast of characters. I think the combat's really fun. I hit level 30, which is where things can, like, you get some really powerful skills. So I like hurl my shield as a warrior, but now it's like super poison and it bounces around and hits everyone and poisons them. And just, I just feel really cool, which I know, like, is that really what Dragon Age is? And who cares? I'm having a good time. And that's what's important to me. That wasn't me saying that to you. That's me saying that to, you know, the faceless you existing in the clouds.
I won't lie. I gave up on Dragon Age after Origins, so I don't know what it really is. I know what Origins was.
Yeah, Origins was its own thing, but then 2 was very different, 3 was very different, and now this is very different.
Yeah.
It's always been different.
I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I've heard some of the lore now since 4 came out, and I'm just like, I don't think any of this was intended in 1.
It's hard to say, but also, who cares?
I don't. It doesn't matter what was intended in 1. I'm just saying, like, there, 1 was about, like, the blight and, like, being wardens and fighting it. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, my character in Veilguard is a warden.
Oh, I didn't think the wardens were around anymore.
Uh-huh. They're still around.
Oh.
They were around in 3. 2, you're in, like, one specific place, like, the whole entire game, and it wasn't really a thing. But they were around in 3. Or an Inquisition, and now a Veilguard. I mean, they're still around. Things are looking pretty bad for them, but
see, that shows what I know. I had no idea. I thought, for some reason, I thought Alistair was like the last big one.
Who knows? Because I mean, in Inquisition, you had what is his name, Blackwall, who was a warden, and he's one of your crew, one of your guys, which is pretty cool. And then you have a Davrim in this game, who is a warden.
Two turned me off of the series so hard.
I understand.
I know you liked 2.
I understand being turned off by it. I had a nice time when I finally got around to like giving it a fair shake.
Yeah, I might go back and try Veilguard one of these days. I mean, I've never tried it.
Go forward.
I just love Origins so much.
Origins is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it felt like my choices have mattered too.
It's always good,
which is cool. So yeah, Dragon Age Veilguard, the Veilguard. It should just be Veilguard. I'm having fun, and I feel like maybe you should buy it before EA is owned by Saudi Arabia.
You should. I think that's already happened, though, hasn't it?
I mean, it hasn't gone through officially,
But
it's going to happen. But it's not yet.
Man, I don't even know what we're gonna do if they buy Warner Brothers.
Because isn't that DC?
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia's buying Warner Brothers?
Well, originally it looked like Paramount and Warner Brothers were going to merge. But there has been rumblings that Saudi Arabia is putting together a bid to buy it. That could just be rumblings.
Could be rumblings. Mergers are dumb.
Yes, you're right.
Nobody wins except the rich people. Anyway... What's your one more thing, Chance?
My one more thing is an album that I just can't stop listening to. And if you followed me on Blue Sky, which I know you haven't, I know you
have. I have.
Well, you have, yes. I'm just saying out there.
The faceless you.
Let me pull it up. It's Art of Love by Olivia Dean. I know that she's really big right now, so I'm probably not sounding surprised. After the Taylor Swift reset of the charts, which I had been looking forward to because the charts were terrible, this little song was now on number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100s. It was called "Man I Need," and I was like, "Man, I will listen to anything new on the charts." Like, let me pull this up. It was kind of like retro funk. I mean this in the best way possible. Like, you could make another Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap to this song. Like, it feels like it belongs in it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Kind of invokes that kind of era also maybe like kind of an Amy Winehouse kind of vibe. This is really, I remember joking with myself saying, like, I don't know if I love this because it's great, or I love this because I am just such a sucker for modern retro pastiche. And I think it's both. I think I love it so much because it's both. And so I loved it so much that I kind of put on the album while I was doing some dishes. And now if I'm pretty much going to do anything where I just want to listen to something, I've kind of been re-listening to this album. I listened to Life of a Showgirl like 3 times and I was pretty done with it. I probably listened to Man's Best Friend like 4 or 5 times. I'm not done with it, but I was pretty done. But I probably listened to this one like 7. And Man I Need is kind of like, if I just need something to play that's pleasant, I put it on. So The Art of Loving by Olivia Dean. She's been nominated for Best New Artist for the Grammys. I kind of think that's a mistake because none of this album is eligible for this year. So that's kind of based on nothing, because it came out like right after the cutoff for the Grammys. So it's like she's being she's up for Best New Artist based mostly on like older work and vibes. I legitimately think if this came out in like early September, I'm not going to say it would have caught on the same way. I just don't know the answer to that. But if I think this had came out in early September and kind of was where it is now in the cultural zeitgeist, I think it would have swept the Grammys. I really do. But that being said, it'll be eligible for the Grammys next year, and we'll see how that ends up going. Coming out like just days before
it's
the Grammys.
It's kind of a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Forget about it.
But the lead track that's not the intro, Nice to Each Other, is a great song. So Easy, parentheses, To Fall in Love. I really like that one. Like I said, Man I Need is kind of my jam right now. A Couple Minutes I really like. Baby Steps I really like. So I just really like this album. I think you should try it out, all of you out there. I played Man I Need for Cameron the other night. I think he enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's nice.
But yeah, if you are just like looking for some great music to going on, I suggest you find it with Olivia Dean personally. Her and R&B artist Leon Thomas are the kind of the best things on the charts right now.
That's what I've always said.
And I've always said it.
I did. Always. Olivia Dean, Leon Thomas.
I am a little bummed that Christmas is kind of coming up. I mean, I'm always bummed that Christmas is coming up. But I really think, just with how popular Man I Need is getting, and how fast it's climbing the charts, I really think it would spend quite a few weeks at number one. But the Christmas
freaking thing, Mariah Carey wasn't on her way.
Did you see the Sephora ad?
No.
Oh, you didn't see it? I wonder if it actually mattered.
I don't see ads. Ads don't, I'm immune to them.
A lot of people were really mad at that Sephora ad she did.
What was it?
It was basically like people talking about how hard time is right now, and Mariah Carey and other people being like, it doesn't matter, it's Christmas, buy stuff.
Oh yeah, that's a bad way to go.
Yeah, it really is. So, but yeah, I really think this Olivia Dean song would gain some traction and do really well on the charts. Were it not for the Christmas takeover coming up.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've done it. We've done another episode of this show. 1 year. 1 year. Good job. I'm gonna reach through the camera and shake your hand. Good job. Yeah, but we want to thank you for being on this journey with us, dear listener, the faceless you that we talk to. Yeah, it's just been really fun. And those of you who've listened even just a little bit, it's been nice to do this with you. You know how you can reach out to us. We've already talked about it. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have thoughts on Mariah Carey? We'd love to hear them.
You want to hear Cameron and I talk more about how we don't like Somber.
Mm-hmm. The LaCroix of Timothée Chalamet's.
My wife said he looks like you ordered Timothée Chalamet on Temu.
That's what I said. I said oh, that's on this show.
Maybe she got it from you then.
Does she listen?
No, but maybe I told her.
It's a common expression. I can't claim to own it. Many of my students, my seventh graders in particular, will be like, wait, Mr. Liner, you know Phantom of the Opera? Or just like insert some very commonly known thing. And I'm like, you guys are 13. You have not invented anything.
Yes.
don't step to me.
In our Sunday school class, we have a middle school teacher, and he said that all of his students are calling him Girly Pop. All of his like girl students.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was delightful.
Yep, they do say that.
Like, hey, Girly Pop. And he's like, what? Okay.
Fair enough. But I think that will bring us to the end of our show. So thank you again for listening.
Bye, Girly Pops.
Bye. See you, Girly Pops. But you can find us next week, hopefully, at the same turtle time and the same bat channel.